we saw the white men, our colonial powers, as our enemies. But I think, no, not that I think, something that is worse than an enemy is a traitor.
The crowds paying homage to Jerry Rawlings as he lay in state at the Accra International Conference Centre this week have been passing a coffin which contains multitudes. Africa's post-colonial decades have furnished many leaders recalled, occasionally with a shudder, as brutal military dictators, and a few others thought of more fondly as visionary democratic reformers. Jerry Rawlings, Ghana's longest-serving president, was both. Rawlings died back on November 12th, aged 73, according to some reports of COVID-19. The delay until this week for the appropriate observances to be enacted, his state funeral is scheduled for Wednesday, January 27th, has been due to a number of factors. The COVID-19 pandemic, Ghana's presidential and parliamentary election in December 2020, and a subsequent squabble over who should be in charge of Rawlings' send-off and, implicitly, his legacy. It all got a bit unseemly, some of Rawlings' old party threatening that if their opponents, then in government, buried Rawlings, they'd dig him up and bury him again. Rawlings, the son of a Ghanaian mother and a Scottish father, made his first grab for power in May 1979. He was, at the time, a 31-year-old flight lieutenant in the Ghana Air Force. He and a group of other excitable young officers attempted to overthrow the incumbent military dictatorship led by Lieutenant General Fred Akufo, who had overthrown the previous military dictatorship led by General Ignatius Kutu Acheampong a year previously.
If any further bloodshed had to be avoided in this country, everybody might have as well realize that the ranks have borne the brunt of the suffering of this country for too long.
However, Rawlings' plan had not been thought all the way through. Rawlings was arrested and swiftly sentenced to death. Rawlings' comrades proved better jailbreakers than coup plotters. In June 1979, they sprung Rawlings from prison. They wasted little time in staging another coup, this one successful, and showed no mercy in consolidating their position. Akufo, Acheampong, and another former head of state, Lieutenant General Akwasi Afrifra, were hustled in front of a firing squad. So were eight other senior military officers. Hundreds more of Rawlings' enemies died or disappeared in less formal circumstances.
The threat to the unity of the nation was real. If we had not acted the way we did, the nation could have faced total disintegration. In the circumstances, we have exacted the supreme price in the conviction that it was the only way to save the situation and to leave a lasting legacy for Ghanaians yet unborn, and that when one attains the highest office of state, one should learn to serve the people and not lord it over them, and be prepared at all times to account for their stewardship.
Despite the ruthless military intrigues that had dominated Ghana's politics up until 1979, elections had been scheduled. They went ahead, and Rawlings, apparently satisfied that his purges were complete, handed power over to the winner, Dr. Hilla Liman. Liman lasted 2 years before Rawlings overthrew him as well.
What we need to do in this country is to establish a situation where, even if it was the devil who should come and sit on top of us in Ghana, by virtue of certain procedures, certain practices, the devil cannot get away with doing whatever he wants. He would necessarily have to do what the people expect of him.
Liman survived after a couple of years of house arrest. Many more did not, including several more senior military officers, three Supreme Court justices, and one of Rawlings' own colleagues who was, it remains widely believed, scapegoated and, very definitely, executed for the murder of the judges. This time, Rawlings stayed put. In the early 1980s, he appeared part of an African vanguard keen to take the Soviet side in the Cold War, along with Ethiopia, Angola, and Somalia. For a time, Rawlings counted Fidel Castro, Daniel Ortega, and Muammar Gaddafi among his friends and allies. But he was, first and foremost, a Ghanaian nationalist, and while certainly not immune from a dictator's delusions, an American ambassador of the time called him a populist mystic, Rawlings was, unlike certain of his fellow African leaders of the time, neither fool nor lunatic. As the 1980s wore on, the Soviet model wore thin, in Ghana as elsewhere, and Rawlings tilted his country gradually towards the West. Rawlings returned Ghana to democracy in 1992, recognizing that this was where the future lay, and perhaps tiring of the occupational hazards of the military dictator's life. He survived at least five coup attempts himself. Rawlings won 1992's presidential election. It would arguably have been difficult not to, with the apparatus of the state and a compliant media at his command. He won again in 1996, and then, observing the term limits in Ghana's constitution, retired from politics in 2001. Generally fondly indulged elder statesmanship followed, recollections of Ghana's relative prosperity and stability under President Jerry Rawlings fresher than memories of fear and turbulence under Flight Lieutenant Jerry Rawlings.
Africa finds herself in a catch-22 situation, you see.
She better watch what she says here and there, or else you don't get that aid or that assistance, etc., etc. What kind of blackmail is this? And it's a painful thing for me sitting here to have to be making such admissions. But these are some of the truths, the hard facts, my dear.
Ghana is, in fairness, economically better off than much of sub-Saharan Africa and generally rates pretty highly in rankings of African governance, though recent events might knock it down a few rungs. December's election delivered a hung parliament, and at one point in the subsequent wrangling, soldiers entered the chamber to separate brawling MPs. Defenders of Rawlings, though, are not without a case when they argue, as they will, especially this week, that the eventual omelette justified the breaking of the eggs. The idea of Rawlings as a personification of Africa's hopeful journey from rule by khaki-clad strongmen to government by elected politicians is an appealing one. But the coup d'etat, of the kind that brought Rawlings to power twice, has not gone entirely out of style. Indeed, it may be enjoying a renaissance to judge by events of the past decade in Niger, Guinea-Bissau, Madagascar, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Mali, Malawi, Ivory Coast, Benin, Chad, Burundi, Burkina Faso, Zimbabwe, Sudan, and Gabon. Apologies to anyone we missed. It seems sadly unlikely that Rawlings' example, in this respect, will be finally interred with him.
Countrymen, you're either a part of the problem or a part of the solution. Thank you.
For Monocle 24, I'm Andrew Muller.